Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify has made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us." Chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify at shopify.com/blackprint, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/blackprint. Shopify.com/blackprint.
Everyone deserves a chance in the driver's seat. For GM and Revolt, that means leading the way on the road to an all-electric future and envisioning a world with zero crashes, zero tailpipe emissions, and zero congestion. GM's committed to making EVs accessible for everybody. That means you too. So what are you waiting for? GM's got the keys. You grab the wheel. Learn more about an all-electric future and the 000 initiative at GM.com. GM, everybody in.
I had a meeting with a really successful agent that, you know, some friends have set me up on a, you know, so you guys should have lunch. And this is several years ago. And it was a real, really unremarkable lunch because, you know, I'm talking with this cat and like, I'm like, shit, man, I'm like, is this dude going to talk? Like, what's going on? Right. And so I finally was ready to give up. And I said, are you enjoying what you're doing? And that was kind of the magic thing for him, because he says to me, he looks at me, he's like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, you know, I work with people who, you know, influence ideas and culture. And he said, I think that's kind of exciting. He said, don't you?
My name is Detavio Samuels, and welcome to The Black Print, where I sit with the innovators, disruptors, and change makers, laying the groundwork for the next generation of cultural leaders. This is The Black Print. At Revolt, what I hope we are doing is building like a stable of incredible unicorns, largely Black people who may look different and talk different, but are so dope at their craft, the type of people you can't find anywhere else. And I think you're a unicorn in terms of what you've been doing, in terms of what you've built. And so just looking forward to having that conversation with you.
Appreciate it, man. Looking forward to a day when that's not the case. Happy to be here.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back to the beginning. Start me at the beginning. Wherever you think the beginning is for Brian Dobson, where do we start?
Start with my birthplace. I was born in Long Beach, California. Raised by my grandmother and my father. They were the, you know, people who really, you know, added a lot of discipline and, you know.
That means they were strict.
Man, I tell
I know
people
that key word.
My father was the domestic terrorist in Long Beach.
Okay.
He was real strict, and my grandmother was strict. But you know, it helped me to, you know, to have some structure in my life, because where I grew up, you know, I grew up with a lot of kids that didn't have a lot of structure, and you know, I was always feeling at that time like I was missing out. I went to school across town, and I grew up having a, you know. You know, defend myself from people who, you know, thought I was a fake or, you know, like, you know, why do you talk like that? Why do you, you know, come across like that?
I tell people all the time, like, our era growing up, there was only one way to be, which was hard.
Yeah.
Like, these kids nowadays get to be cool skateboarders and cool nerds. And that stuff didn't exist back then. It was like, you were either hard or people were pressing you.
Yeah, that's 100, man. Yeah, but, you know, it taught me a lot about, you know, resiliency and being tough. And, you know, my early ambitions were just, you know, I just really wanted to play basketball. That was kind of like my thing. And I spent a lot of time dedicated to that. And, you know, the time and effort I put into that, you know, my father was like, look, if you're gonna play ball, you gotta, the grades gotta be a certain thing. And so I played a lot of ball and studied quite a bit. And, you know, it was always like college was, you know, not going to college was not an option. It was always like, you're going to college, you're going to figure that out. And so, you know, looking back, it was a lot of pressure, but, you know, pressure makes diamonds.
Right? Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
So when do you start to feel like talent management is a thing you want to do? Does that happen in college? How early does that happen?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, when I was in college.
Yeah, what was a college dream?
College was, you know, after I realized I wasn't going to be anybody's attorney, I was in college in the, you know, late 80s. And so hip hop was actually becoming a business. Mm. And I thought I wanted to be in the music business. I was, you know, I was inspired by, you know, Russell Simmons and David Geffen and thought I wanted to be like that. So, you know, I was booking talent at UCLA. I'd bring, you know, acts and shows through, and, you know, I had, you know, my share of dealing with musicians, like, I'm cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good. It's a different world, you know, like, it, you know, like, I love the musicians, but the world is like, it wasn't for me. And, you know, I got really curious about what I should be doing. And I went to the Career Guidance Center and filled out a questionnaire at the time, and everything came back film and TV, which made sense because, you know, for most of my life, I grew up as an only child. You know, I have brothers and sisters, but we didn't grow up in the same household. So TV was my company. So got an internship, interned under a really successful producer, and thought, you know what, I want to be a producer. And, you know, my parents had looked at me and thought they wanted me to go into, you know, some kind of vocation that they were familiar with. Doctor, lawyer, and, you know, going into film and TV as a, you know, black man coming out of college was like, it's just, it's a wild notion. Was a wild notion, still is to some degree, because, you know, you can't see it. You know, I had never met anybody that actually, that looked like me that was in that world. I just knew that the guy I was interning was getting money. So I was like, you know what, I'll do that. And one of his executives, right, you know, as I was graduating college, said to me, you know, why don't you go work at a talent agency? It's a good first job. And a lot of, you know, people work in talent agencies go on to be producers. So, you know, coming out of college, you know, interviewed around for about a month, month and a half, and was fortunate enough to land a job at one of the major talent agencies.
Which talent agency was that?
United Talent Agency.
Yeah, one of the biggest.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But that was, you know, that was tough sledding because, you know, I was the only black male in the whole agency. There was one other black female agent, but, you know, it was every day felt like a fight. Every day felt like, you know, I tell people now, like, I really didn't feel like a full human being. And I like to call it what it is. Like, I don't know that I would say anybody was overtly racist, but the institutional kind of thing was, well, you could feel that daily. And I was really, you know, I was really lost, man. And the other thing is, like, once you get inside places like that, like, I'm really big on modeling. I'm really big on being able to see it and visualize it. And so once you get inside a structure like that, you can't see anybody who's actually ever made it, right? Like, who's actually, like, a partner or someone that's empowered at the agency that you look at them and like, oh, I want to rock like that.
Yeah.
So that was one of the most difficult things about being there. And, you know, when I look back, it's like I was in desperate need of a mentor. I needed somebody to tell me, you know, just, you know, take the knowledge that you get from this institution and utilize it and figure out what you want to do with that. All I could think was like, I just, everything about it, I was allergic to. But I had a real specific turning point when I was in the agency that helped shape me going into talent management.
So let's do that. So you're right now, you're at UTA, right? One of my favorite sayings is, if you can see it, you can be it, right? You're like, I couldn't see it, therefore I didn't want to be it,
right?
So what is the thing that happens that causes you to eject out of that machine?
Pete Rock and CL Smooth.
Okay.
They reminisce over you.
Yeah.
The music video was hot at the time. I'm old, okay? So, like, let's just get that out of the way, okay. Right? The director of the music video, UTA represented. Mm. So, you know, I'm either in the mail. I think I was in the mail room. I'm digging through tapes, and you know, I'm trying to make some submissions for some agents and putting a package together. This is not links, tapes,
okay.
Right? And I'm digging through, and I see that they represented the director, Marcus Rayboy. Mm. And I was like, wait. You represent Marcus Rayboy, you know, and I'm kind of like, I'm a little stunned by it because here's somebody that meant something to me, mm-hmm. right? Here's somebody that was part of my world every Friday night, Rap City Top 10.
Yes,
it was like three or four weeks in a row, and you know, it was like a cinematic video, and it was one of the things that I saw in the world that I thought, like, cause, you know, when I was at UTA, hip hop was starting to infiltrate Hollywood, and some of what's going on then looks like what's going on now. That's why I'm a little weary about what's going
okay.
on now.
We're definitely going to have to get to that. Yeah.
So, you know, I looked at this person and no one really cared. No.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field. From free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify has made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us." Chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify.
Bring your business to Shopify at shopify.com/blackprint, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/blackprint, shopify.com/blackprint.
Well, it wasn't affecting anyone in the building the same way it was affecting me. And one of the things I was really clear on is that nobody really knows shit. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, please. This is Revolt, baby. Be you.
Nobody really knows anything. Like, you know, art is really subjective. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the separator between, you know, what people think about certain things is, do they have the right people behind them? Do they have people who advocate for them and translate who they are to the right people and help them build a voice? And it was clear to me that, you know, the agency was focused on the people that inhabited their world. And that's why I look at it from very clear terms. I just think that somebody touches you or they don't, right? Mm. But there was nobody speaking on behalf of artists that look like me or come from the places I come from or have the cultural identity that was so important to me growing up in Long Beach.
So now I get it. I already know the full story. So all of a sudden, you start realizing that these people who you care about, the rest of the machine doesn't care about at all. And so you then decide you want to start your own talent management agency and you jump out and go do it, right?
Yeah. You know, that's not what happened. Right? I thought I was ready for that.
Okay.
But, you know, like, I think that, you know, the way I looked at it too was like, you know, there's agents and then there's managers, right? Mm-hmm. And what the function that agents serve, you know, on the film and TV side is a lot different than what, you know, managers serve, but there's some redundancy. We're both there to keep artists working, right? But the manager is, you know, I like to think of us as being a little bit more architectural, right? And, you know, we often sign people at an early stage in their career and are responsible for the whole wheel in a client's life, right? And so I'm talking to the publicist and the attorney and the business manager and the agent and the attorney, you know, like on and on and on. And mm-hmm. so my job is to keep it all moving and also have a vision. Mm-hmm. And the agents, you know, this is no disrespect to the agents, and, you know, I consider many of them like my closest partners and allies. It just tends to be a little bit more transactional mm-hmm. by the nature of the job. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, you know, as a manager, I could really actually be myself, because within UTA, it's just a bigger machine and I'm not corporate. I say what I think, which got me into a little bit of trouble. Now I'm a lot more mm-hmm. strategic, but, like, you know, something, I was confronted with something and I would just deal with it mm-hmm. instead of, you know, playing the chess game. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, you know, personality wise, the job suited me. I like the way they dress, because mm-hmm. I don't really wear suits every day. You know, like mm-hmm. I'm a tennis shoe guy. I have always been that, right? And then just the corporate nature of it all, just like I reject it wholly. Mm-hmm. So I left UTA and I bounced around quite a bit, you know, trying to get on my feet, trying to put together a business. I was temping at HBO, figuring out my plan, and was managing nights and weekends. I was an assistant working in development at HBO, and got a hold of a couple decent writer directors and developed one and sold a script. Oh. And so now I'm a big boy, right? Like, I can now, I'm actually bringing in some commission, so I can go, you know, meet with other management companies and potentially get on as a manager.
What did that feel like, selling your first script? Like, that's a big deal. There's a lot of people out here working towards that. What did that feel like?
Well, you know, as
did it feel like you were winning?
Yeah, it did. It did. I mean, particularly because of what I was doing and the struggle I was having to try to mm-hmm. figure it out. And, like, you know, I think that, you know, sometimes you can be, you know, more lucky than good. I think I was a little bit lucky. Mm. But also, don't think I was too lucky, because I had, you know, the kind of the eye to see that this person was talented and that she mattered. And I fought for her, which is the hallmark of what I do today. But yeah, did I feel good about it? Absolutely. It got me out of my assistant as a position, my assistant position, and put me in a place where I could actually, like, be a manager and start to rock out with clients and, like, really represent artists and not be behind the desk as an assistant, although there's a lot of value in that. Mm-hmm. So my first real win as a manager was I, you know, through a friend of a friend, got introduced to Q-Tip, Kamal Fareed, you know, from Tribe Called Quest.
Of course. And,
you know, he was looking for a manager, and I was like, that might be me. So
what gave you the confidence? So you sold your first script, which means you're in the TV and film side. What gave you the confidence that you could also do it on the music side? It's a whole different network. It's a whole different group of people.
You know, I didn't know any better. You know, I didn't know what I was walking into. You know, I got introduced to him, like I said, through another channel. I met him. He was in Big Bear. They were doing he and Tribe were doing a concert out there. So, you know, I went out there and met him, talked to him about, you know, what a fan I was of his, because I, you know, a lot of it starts there. Like, do I see you the way other people see you? Mm. Right. So I talked to him about that. And then, you know, he talked to me about his struggles being taken seriously as, you know, as a on camera talent. He was already, he had a lot of wind at his back as a musician. And, you know, we just he agreed to work with me. And then next thing I know, here comes Mona Scott. Here comes Lighty.
Okay,
like, they're
okay.
Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Right. And I didn't, again, I didn't know what I was doing, man. I just, you know, I was just moving the best way that I knew how. You know, these days, of course, I would make the call and say, listen, you know, this is your client. And, you know, I would have followed protocol. But it was
then.
Just, you know, I was just excited to work with somebody that actually people had heard of.
Yeah.
So I worked with him for about a year and a half, and I was working out of a management company. It was a small operation, and then that kind of just fell apart. So
can I ask how it falls apart? Is there like one big moment, one big thing that makes it all kind of crumble, or no, just like a slow?
Think of it as a wet paper bag, right? Like it just starts to just rip at the bottom. Like it just, it was never a real operation. It was somebody that was like, put me on, gave me an opportunity, and it was myself and a woman who ran it, and you know, she really didn't know much about running a company. I damn sure didn't know much about running a company, let alone managing clients.
How old are you at this time? Like, what age?
I was 27.
Okay.
27 years old. And next thing I know, I'm working out of my home. And, you know, this is late 90s, something like that, 99. I was working out of my home with Q-Tip and, like, three or four writer directors. And, you know, I'm trying to get hired. You know, I'm like trying to figure out, like, is there a company that can work with me? And again, like, you have to think about the time. There's not, you know, black voices, black stories, black artists. They were kind of looked at like, we'll tolerate you. And this was after the mid 90s, where we saw lots of films by people of color made,
Absolutely.
Black folks made, right?
Absolutely.
Like, we saw the Fridays and the
Boys in the Hood,
you know, the South Centrals, and, you know, Don't Be a Menace, the comedies, the dramas. There was some TV. There was people like Robert Rodriguez that got launched. And then it just kind of faded away. And there also wasn't anybody in the infrastructure positions. There weren't people at management companies or agencies or executives. So when I was struggling, when I was trying to find who would actually give me an opportunity, I had nowhere to turn, and I hadn't built a network yet either. So, you know, I interviewed with several people, and then, you know, before you know it, it's like 6 months throughout the year. We made a deal for Q-Tip to do a movie that he was writing, starring in, doing the music and executive producing. So it was a really complex deal. And it was a fairly lucrative deal at the time for me. So I had something going, but, you know, deals take months and months and months of time.
Close.
So I'm scraping the bottom. I'm not going home. I don't do that. Like, I'm not going to Long Beach, and my family didn't have no money to give me, but I'm not going back and saying, you know, like, what can you scrape together for me? I'm not, you know, I didn't want to quit. But I was like, what do I do? So one of my closest friends, who smokes too much weed, he said, look, why don't you come work with me? I said, bruh, you are telemarketing.
Get out.
Yeah. I said, I'm not doing that.
And you're selling scripts. You're working with Q-Tip. You're working on a big, almost like major deal. And your boy's telling you got to come do telemarketing.
Because, you know, I had a roommate at the time. I'm living in, you know, west side of L.A. I got rent. I'm just trying to pay for fax paper. You know, a telephone so I could keep it moving. And
did you do it?
I did it. It was raising money for nonprofit organizations. Okay. 4 hours a day. It was really.
Were you good at it?
What's that?
Were you good at it?
I was great at it.
Okay.
I was great at it. I could sell, bro. So next thing I know, you know, I'm telemarketing.
How long did you do that?
3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the power of God, the universe, wherever you want to lean into.
Amen.
I showed up one day. And I was like, man, I'm better than this. I know I'm better than this. And I was like, God, I was like, I want to get out of here, man. And as things go, I got into a confrontation with.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Somebody at this place, okay. right? She, it was a woman. She attacked me, I swear okay. to God. And we had a conversation, and you know, I just kind of was like, you know, whatever, whatever. And I got fired. Mm. I got fired. And
it's amazing that you can say that you can point to God in a moment that is about you being fired from the job that you had.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
a lot of people could have framed that differently and could have seen that differently.
Yeah.
But for you, it must have been like a release that you now believe in.
At the time, it felt like the worst thing in the world because right, I had exactly. bounced around and like, I'm just trying to get my feet underneath me.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in bed for one day feeling sorry for myself, but that's just not me. And I said, I'm going to give this one more go. I'm going to make a couple of calls, see what pops up. And if not, I'm going to have to let this go.
Mm.
Like I was real about it.
Last shot.
You know? And the first call I made that morning was somebody I had met with in a general meeting. And that individual said to me, look, you know, I really liked our meeting. Let's see what we can make happen. Mm. 2 weeks later, landed a job with somebody who became my partner and one of the founders of my now company, Artist First.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so is there anything, I want to jump into Artist First, yeah. but is there anything that's important for us to talk about between this telemarketing moment, you meeting this person, and then Artist First becoming what it is today?
I mean, look, there's a lot, you know, one of the things I still hadn't gone through what I needed to know as a manager. And like, you know, one of the things I tell, you know, some of the people that I mentor and, you know, people who come from where I come from, you know, Black folks, Latino, anybody that's looking for a way through what they're doing is like, you need process.
Mm.
You need to learn your craft. You need to understand what you're doing. You don't want to be falling down every time you get up.
Mm.
Right. And so for me, I made a lot of mistakes early on, just not knowing the things I needed to know as a manager, right? And the things, how to conduct myself, how to deal with frustrations and emotions and the challenges that you feel as a Black man in this business and the best way to go through them. And so, you know, for, you know, I'd say 5-6 years, once I got on at what was Principato Young, now Artist First, I just made every mistake you could count on, mm. right? Like anything that anybody's been through, I did. You know, and I'm grateful for it. You know, I have no regrets about it. My role could have been a little bit different had I had somebody to just say, mm-hmm. yo,
come this way,
you know. So, yeah, that's what I would mark between, you know, that time and, you know, all these years later is like process really matters. Like, I know we want to, because of how we've come up and how we've been denied so long, we want to skip steps, but there's no steps, no shortcuts you can take to being great. Like, yeah. that just doesn't work.
Brother, I so relate to that. It's like when I was young, I was always trying to get things done as quickly as possible, right? Graduated from high school at 17, probably business school at 25. Most people graduated at 20. Like, I was always on this fast course, president by 30. And when I was young, I didn't have a lot of respect for experience.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm 41,
right.
so much of it is just pattern recognition. It's like, I've seen this before. I know what to do in this moment. Back then, you don't have that pattern recognition because you don't have the experience. And so now I have such a an appreciation for having made the mistakes, for getting the experience that I have in order to make the calls that I'm making today. So let's jump into Artist First really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
For the people who don't know, let's talk about what Artist First is, and then I want to hear you talk about your vision.
So company's been around for 22 years. We're based in, Century City. The main offices. We have an office in Chicago, in New York. We represent writers, actors, and directors in film and TV. We also act as producers and have produced a number of television shows and features. And I should add, too, we represent producers and stand-ups. I mean, you know, anybody you can kind of think of in media, with the exception of in the music space, we work with. And so, one of the things that I really appreciate about the company is we have a set of core values in how we do things. A lot of those core values were set by the early group that founded the company, mm-hmm. and myself included. And, you know, there's a certain way we go about doing our business with a lot of integrity and focus and dedication. And, you know, we really look after you know, artists and making sure that, because I think that the notion of being an artist is such a crazy thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care, you know, what, you know, where we are in the span of being an artist and, you know, how big media has become. The idea that you can sustain yourself being an artist mm-hmm. and actually build a career and build a life as an artist is a wild thing. And so, you know, you have to have people that really believe in your dream and help create the dream with you. Because, you know, I never like to look at myself as like, you know, somebody that's being drug along by the artist. Mm-hmm. I like to feel like I am a part of that artist's journey. And, you know, I'm selfishly look at myself as a dream maker because, mm-hmm. you know, I get these people coming to me with these wild ideas and, you know, sometimes they feel a little bit unreasonable, but like you can't be an artist without being somewhat unreasonable, right? Mm-hmm. Like nothing happens unless somebody as an artist says, I want to do something like just imagine you'd have no bridges or you wouldn't be able to fly if there weren't people who had wild ideas. Yeah. So, you know, the idea that, you know, when we changed the name to Artists First, it was really because we're at the forefront of taking artists from point A to wherever they want to go. Mm. So that's a lot of the vision. You know, the simplicity of it all is like, I want to enjoy coming to work every day because, you know, like all of us, I'm constantly challenged. My time is challenged. My focus is challenged. My emotional kind of composure is always challenged. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be in an environment of people that I trust and that have my back and that I have their back. And as somebody who played a lot of sports coming up, and as a big sports fan, you know, you can't get anything done without a team. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
I know you work with a lot of black talent, but I want to talk to you about the importance of having black talent managers and uh-huh. a black talent management company in the industry.
Right.
Why is that necessary? Why can't they just go work with any white guy at CAA? Or why can't they just go? What is it that you guys bring to the table? What is the importance of what you bring to the table for artists who are trying to chase and pursue these dreams?
Well, it really cuts back to the story I told you at UTA and, you know, having somebody who sees you, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, like, if you want to dive into that, like, see you, oh yeah, that's that person, right? That's the person that my family recognizes, or that, you know, my friends, my because my close circle of friends are not really in the business. Mm-hmm. So the people that, you know, I'm proud to represent, and I know that they have an audience, and I know that they move culture, right? And mm-hmm. they have an effect on people. I had a meeting with a really successful agent that, you know, some friends had set me up on a, you know, so you guys should have lunch. And this is several years ago. And it was a real, really unremarkable lunch because, you know, I'm talking with this cat and like, I'm like, shit, man. I'm like, is this still going to talk? Like, what's going on? Right. And so I finally was ready to give up. And I said, are you enjoying what you're doing? And that was kind of the magic thing for him, because he says to me, he looks at me, he's like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, you know, I work with people who, you know, influence ideas and culture. And he said, I think that's kind of exciting. He said, don't you? Mm. And then I looked at, you know, and I looked at what I did in a completely different way. Right. Mm. I looked at like the responsibility that I have and how important that is to protect these voices. And a lot of times, if you don't know what, you know, where these people come from and their journey and their struggle and, you know, what it is they're trying to do, how can you protect them properly? Right. And you don't often know what you're protecting. So and the other thing is, it's like the struggles that I see them going through is things that I went through. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like I said, I when I was at UTA, I got sent home. Like, I was wild, man. Like, that's the environment I came from. We as black people, you see some bullshit, you're on that bullshit, right? Like, so that just is the way things go. And I have to advise my clients. I'm like, there's a better way for us to do this, right? What's the way for you to get where you're going and not have all the confrontation, but win? Because all we're trying to do is win anyway. And so what does winning look like to you? That doesn't mean somebody taking advantage of you, you're playing you, or you punking out. That ain't got nothing to do with it. Like, there's a time for that, right? But like, when you in the mode of doing business and you're trying to get from one place to another, particularly as an artist in a complicated world that is not working for you, the only way you get in there is by being strategic, right? So that's how you win wars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, so I love everything you just said. So, like, what I heard.
Yo, what's going on? Hope all is well. I'm Duke.
I'm Omar.
I'm Jalan, and this is Nice and Neat, the podcast.
We're three quintessential friends dedicated to the 360-degree development of men.
Our goal is to not only share our experiences, but offer as much value as we possibly can through the lessons we've learned along the way.
When I say we talk about everything, we talk about everything. Character, discipline, career development. Oh, and let me not forget, we get real personal.
Now make sure you subscribe so you never miss any of our episodes. Write a review, let us know what you think. Enjoy.
I've heard a couple of things throughout this interview. One, that for Black talent, you are often the person who sees them. Mm-hmm. You are also the person that connects them. You are the bridge. You are the person that helps them get from where they are to the dream. And then there's this third piece where you're a protector. Yeah. So that's all the work that you're doing for talent.
Right.
Talk to me about the challenges of being a Black man in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I talked a little bit about them, you know. when I start out early on, you know, people would test you. They say, you know, they make these little slick comments, mm-hmm. and, you know, they'd wonder about, you know, you could tell people were judging you, and, you know, and like, you know, it's like you play this game in your head, right? You're like, is that what they said? You know, like, and it becomes about what are you going to do about it, right? And you know, nowadays, you know, the way I deal with things is particularly confrontations. Like when I get into a confrontation, I mean it. Like I want to get into confrontation. Mm. Like if we get into an argument,
I'm here for the smoke.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. One of my close friends, he says sometimes when you, in order to get peace, you got to raise some hell.
Yeah.
Right. So like I mean, my clients know. Like if they need me to bark, I bark.
Mm.
And the people around me know, but you know, the challenge is like, again, people expect something from you. And then when you don't give them that, mm-hmm. what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think you got a lot of that going on.
You still get slick comments. People still, I know you said you got that at UTA, but now you are the man building artists first. You got an incredible roster of talent, which is the last question I want to get to. People still got slick comments.
Oh yeah. Once in a while. Yeah. But like I said, I'm ready for it. I kind of enjoy it. Like I wake up with something, like I kind of need it. You know, I'm like one of those people, I got to work with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like I love hiring people with a chip on their shoulder.
Oh yeah, that's how I get up every day.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. I need people who have a chip on their shoulder. Okay, last question, then I'm going to get you out of here. You are building an amazing house. Even if I just look at Black-ish, mm-hmm. which was an amazing show that had so much impact on the culture, for the culture. You touched so many people, from the writers to the artists. Can you just talk to me a little bit about this machine and this ecosystem that you're building, mm-hmm. and how you work across the ecosystem to make sure that everyone in the family eats, to make sure that everyone in the family is getting roles and jobs and chasing the dreams that they all came to you saying that they wanted to accomplish?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is like, you know, understanding that, like I said, my responsibility with those people. So that's the first thing, right? I'm on the line with a lot of folks. And, you know, not everybody stays with you, right? Mm-hmm. Like not every artist that I've worked with has gone the full ride with me. Some people leave, you know, and we have this, you know, thought as managers and people represent artists. How much do you give of yourself? Because these clients are not like, you can't put them in a bank vault, mm-hmm. right? They can come and they can go. What I really try to do first and foremost is give these things my all, as much as I can give them, and understand that, you know, they're all, you know, sort of dependent on me to help them in their journey. You know, and the ecosystem that I built is like, I try to put people together whenever I can. I try to, you know, cross pollinate my artist base whenever I can. That's a lot of how Black-ish came to be, was putting Kenya and Anthony together. You know, in a general meeting, and, you know, they had their conversation, and a lot sprung from that. And then thereby Black-ish was born.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's just, you know, I've been doing this for such a long time. Like I said, it is giving people the rules to the game,
mm-hmm.
right? Is to make sure that they understand how the game is played. And, you know, we can look at our perspective, you know, as, you know, in our business or in our lives any way we want to. what I try to tell people is like, these things are working for us. We just have to make sure that we are working alongside that, because if we wake up every day thinking the world is working against us, guess what's going to happen? Right. So, in the roster that I represent, it's a lot of just one-on-one, you know, kind of conversations, imparting what I know about life, what I've experienced about life, because all this stuff comes full circle, right? In the business side.
Always.
Yeah.
All right, my very last question. For those people who want to be the next Brian Dobbins, they want to be the next talent manager. I'm a big believer that the goal in life to be happy is to match up our gifts and the things we love with our work. What are the gifts that it takes to be a successful person in your role?
Hey, you got to love to do it, right? You know, like, so you got this, you have to make the decision at some stage that this is what you really want to be doing. Because it's too hard if you don't want to do it. You face too many, you know, artists, they got a lot of demands,
yep,
right?
Of
you know, they want a lot of things. So you got to get up every morning wanting to do it. And then, you know, like, you got to have a mentor, right? You got to take the chance of having, you know, reaching out to people and seeking advice and putting together a plan, right? And knowing what your end game looks like, because I struggled for so many years because I didn't have anybody. I didn't feel like I had people I could turn to and ask for help. And, you know, I used to think that it was weak to ask for help, right? Like, I used to think that was a weakness to ask for help because, you know, my grandmother would always be like, don't go up there asking white people for all that help, you know, like, you know, right? Or, you know, or you just feel like less than sometimes saying, like, can you give me some guidance?
Absolutely.
But, like, that's actually where the strength lies, is by asking for help. I always tell people, like, if you were drowning out in the ocean, would you be too embarrassed to ask for help? Or would you be like, you better fucking come help me, right? Like, so I think that, you know, the way I look at it is like build a tribe of people that you can trust and ask for help for guidance on the journey and knowing what to, you know, expect. And then when you hit a pothole, how to ride through that.
So. Yeah, brother, look, you took us on a journey from finding a tape with Pete Rock, CL Smooth, and that touching you in a way that didn't touch anyone else around you, and then using that energy and that love and that feeling and recognition of that difference to build an amazing powerhouse in the company that you built. And so, first and foremost, I just want to say thank you for showing up. Two, thank you for all of the work that you do for the culture. And let this not be the last time that you and I get to kick it, King.
My man. Thank
all right, thank you, fam.
Appreciate it.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Bueno, ¿qué pasó anoche? Ok, no es lo que esperaba, pero tenía el nivel perfecto de picante.
Suena interesante y caliente.
Tenía todo el sabor. Los Ghost Pepper Wings de Popeyes son tan deliciosos.
Espera, yo pensé que hablábamos de tu cita.
A veces las cosas no son lo que parecen. Pruebo hoy los Ghost Pepper Wings de Popeyes por $5, que tienen el nivel perfecto de sabor y picante. Por tiempo limitado en restaurantes participantes de Estados Unidos. Precio puede variar. Impuestos extra.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.